what I'd love to do within the next hour. First of all, we as McKinsey conducted a study with the Oxford University. And yes, it's an academic study, so you will see a few academic slides and findings. After that, let's talk what can you do with those findings. Because it's like one thing to have academic proof, and it's actually a good thing because most of you professionals will have a gut feeling what is like the success in a project or not and what it depends on. And now we have academic proof from the Oxford University saying X is true and Y isn't. So let's talk about that. Myself, I'm Marcus Thomas. I'm a partner in the McKinsey office in Germany in the BTO. BTO is what we call the business technology office. So the IT guys within management consulting. We might be able to read code. We are probably not able to write code. So this is a business session. So let's stick to that. I did a PhD in computer science and business administration, oh geez, 15 years back. And I'm currently focusing on large projects and trying to go in and rescue them once they've hit a wall. Could be anything from, let's take a German example that is quite well known. We're not able to finish our airport in our in Berlin. We haven't been able to do that for 4 years, which is kind of embarrassing for Germany as the engineering nation. So this will be one of the things where we go in and try to rescue that project. Why is there a problem? The others would be IT project, be it an ERP rollout, software development, anything in between. Please, whenever you have a question, just raise your hand, step up, shout, whatever you'd like. So let's kick off with the academic part. First of all, a few numbers. They're actually even higher now because the study is ongoing. So what we did is we took a look at more than 4,000 projects now. In the beginning, there was the question, what is a mega project? In most terms, we would say anything above 10 million, anything above 10 million US dollars would qualify. But you can see there's actually a few in there that go well beyond that. There's a few of the biggest examples are actually American examples. You would probably know a few of those in, let's say, without confidentiality issues, in a health and government sector, for example. Well, I'm not telling where it is, so yeah, I'm still keeping confidentiality. As you see, most of them were software projects. There's also infrastructure, being in an airport, be it a bridge building, whatever it is. And down there, you see how long those projects are. Currently, the newer projects we're talking about, they're mostly in the span between 5 and 10 years, so longer duration. So this is me trying to be interactive. So there are 6 questions out there. Probably all of you sitting there will have a gut feeling, is it true or not? So let's do all of this, those 6, one step at a time, and we take a look at the academic findings, if it's really true or not. So are IT projects riskier than steel? So median of IT, there goes more projects go wrong than steel projects, so old industry projects. Any opinion? I see nods there. I see a lot of impassive faces staring back. Okay. It depends. Yeah, thank you. That's the consultant answer, you're right. I would use that every single time. But no, now, let's say academic research. So the answer is actually no. Based on the academic research, software projects do not have a higher cost overrun or a higher duration overrun than normal projects like steel projects. But, and there's a, sorry for that, but there's a big but there. Let me see if there's a pointer, yeah. So this is what I said, they're academic slides, but let me, you see here, the middles are more or less the same. There's no big difference. The big difference is down here. This is what we call a black swan, what literature calls a black swan. So once it goes wrong, it goes really wrong. We're talking about a few 100% overrun. And this is what you probably know about when you read in the press some I don't know, health and government issues, for example, they would probably be somewhere here. So no, they're not more risky, but once they go wrong, they go tremendously wrong. Take a look at that one. Cost overrun, once you're in that black swan, is like, on average, almost 500%. Schedule, yes, it's a bit more, but not that bad. Benefits management, and we'll come back to that. In almost all big IT projects, once they go wrong, there hasn't been any benefits management, or at least not a consistent one. That's one of the patterns you will see. And by the way, I'll try to be quick with the academic part so we have more time for the others. So once again, lots of data. If you're wondering, yes, this is a slide from Europe, and we're very much into data. So you can see IT, that's what you already saw. Frequency of overrun with road projects is actually quite common. IT isn't that common. Olympics, and we haven't even factored in Sochi yet. So if you take a look at that one, that's it's literally ridiculous what they spent. But nevertheless, okay. The good thing is the money they spent is not even sponsored by the state, so it doesn't really matter. It's just a private exercise. Okay, I bashed on the public sector. So is it true? Is the public sector worse than business? I heard yes, I heard no. Can I have a show of hands who says public sector is worse? More projects go wrong. Okay, that is, well, more or less half. Okay, so research says no. Okay, once again, very academic slide. It says there is no real difference if you compare the curves. Once there are risks, the red line is what we call the black swans. Yes, especially down here, they will be more pronounced. That's the big difference. But just in like frequency, no, there's no big difference. I'm not sure if that's actually a good or a bad message. Depends on where you stand. But on average, research says it's like that. So, and I promise the slides will get less technical. So if you take a look at cost overrun, and you take a look at the private sector, it increases a bit, but in the public sector, once it goes into real change of processes, change of the business, it will increase dramatically. That's the big difference. So if you're thinking about, I don't know, an upgrade of an ERP system, public sector will do it as good as anybody else. Once it's about changing all the, I don't know, welfare system, for example, especially in Europe, this will increase dramatically. They're not so much used to change management. And by the way, this is also, I'm not that sure about the US. I mean, there's like 4 to 8 years, but in Europe you have some cycles of elections that are really short, so people will not focus on a project that is longer than 3 years, because in public opinion, they will not benefit. And this is change, they just neglect it. They'll say, oh, okay, we're technically done, and you'll cope. And then, bam, costs explode. So schedule overrun, it's exactly what I talked about. They will make sure that they hit it in time. Because once they did within their election window, they can say, well, I finished in time. I don't know why you guys are not able to implement it in the end and live with it, but what we did is fine. So like the next elected party will get that. And with the black swans, it's more or less similar. So, it's my favorite one. Bigger projects are riskier than smaller projects. There's no, maybe, okay. Yeah, cost or schedule overrun. These are like the, yes, yeah, okay. No, they aren't. Based on the sample of 4,000 projects, they aren't. Very nice slide. Nobody understands that. But in the end, the only thing that we need to talk about is this blue line. It's more or less parallel, so it does not increase. The bigger the project budget is, it does not go up dramatically. It's more or less flat. So that means project size does not matter. Saying sizes, million dollar or euro project. It's not talking about number of people, and so which like, kind of factors in, but in the end, that's it. What is quite interesting in that chart is this is the actual actual versus estimated costs, and you can see there are a few very, very dramatic outliers there. So this is the risk of cost black swans, so of projects that have a high overrunning cost. Is that dependent on the size of the program? And the answer is no. Oh, sorry. It actually goes down. I mean, it's not really significant, but it goes down. To be very fair, the reason why it goes down is once you have a really huge IT project, you're probably aware that you will be facing a lot of challenges. Therefore, you factor in more buffers in the beginning. So it's technically correct, but I'm not so sure if it's really that meaningful. But keep in mind, size is not driving project risk. Longer projects are riskier than shorter projects. There's nodding there. More nodding. There's a no. Ah. So academia says yes, most definitely. Once again, take a look at the blue line. It increases. To be fair, it's not that steep, but it increases. And the most interesting thing is what we pointed out here. Doubling project duration increases the costs risk by 10%. So if you're looking at 1.5 years and you have to double to 3 years, it will increase the risk of a black swan by 10%. And if you then factor in that the black swan might have a cost overrun from up to 400%, that's actually a huge number. And it's not only driven by, of course, if you do like 1.5 longer, you will have longer contractors payments. No, it's also driven by you make more mistakes. Sure. We do. I don't have the slide, but it's exactly like you said. Yeah. Steel doesn't change that quickly, so IT, once it's longer, you get a problem. I mean, the simplest problem if you take this conference. I've done a huge ERP rollout into 52 countries, a few hundred million. And actually, within the project timeframe, Microsoft changed the project server version. And all the tech guys, they were like literally doing the typing. They were very upset because we have all those nice features now, but like porting all those over to the new version, I don't know if it fits. So even on an administrative level, that's true. And on the technology level, SAP changed their version too. So, and that was actually the biggest mess of all. So, this is as a rule of thumb. Anything that is higher than 3 years, which is actually this point, risks, which means cost overrun and duration overrun, increase exponentially. So if there's any way, keep your projects below 3 years. In some cases, that's not possible. Do releases. In some cases, even 3 years sounds like a long time. And I'm talking about total project duration. So that includes you go live and you do some support afterwards. It's not only like you do programming and then somebody takes care of the rollout. It's like total project duration. 3 years isn't that long for most projects above 20, 30 million. Normally we have an uproar right here. People say, no, that's not true. Okay. Okay. Well, I more or less answered this one, so I'm not going to ask you. Yes, that's true. Academically speaking, whenever you don't do detailed benefits management, and I'll show you that in a second, this will lead to the highest problems. Let's talk a second about what is benefits management. Most people will say, okay, well, of course, we have a business case. We did the calculation once in the beginning. We have these very good estimates, and we might even update the business case from time to time. Let's be honest, most of us don't. In most organizations, large organizations, yes, there is a business case in the beginning, otherwise you don't get the budget. But do you really update costs? Do you really manage against a business case with business values? To be fair, if you would, I would be out of a job, because that's mainly what I do when I come in. I take a look at that, and in, let's say, 95% of the time, people have forgotten about the business case. They don't even know. They haven't updated it ever again. The board was never informed again. Might be a bit different in some areas in the States, but in like old Europe, most companies don't. Yeah?
How can you do benefits management while the project is in progress? Because many of the projects oftentimes articulate benefits only at the completion of the project.
Yes. Yes and no. I mean, if we're talking about a software rollout, you're totally true. I mean, the real business will only reap benefits once there's a new software. At the same time, what you can do and what often we advise to do is you include the business as much as possible, be it in functional design, even in technical designs, and they will sign off that at this stage in the program, they're still on track. I agree, benefit and technical design is a bit of a stretch. Let me show you two others. Just numbers again. Upper one is benefits were not measured at all. Lower ones were benefits were measured in some way. And it can either be like in a good way or a bad one. There's huge differences. But even if it is just measured, most of them are quite significantly different to the others, especially schedule, so time overrun, and especially the risk that your program totally explodes. The interesting thing is, let me give you one client example. I'm working for a client that is a huge telco equipment manufacturer, and they're actually changing their whole financial reporting system. So any system that is used to steer the company, they're overhauling the whole thing. They have actually changed four different system integrators within the last 3 years, and we're talking about the big names. And well, I'm not judging if rightfully, but they just did, which adds complexity. In the same time, the business, they actually sold off business units, which changes your reporting structure totally. They even sold off parts of their production, which like leaves out value chain steps. So the longer they run with that, and they even try to have benefits measured. To be honest, now in fourth year, they have some benefits that they can't. I mean, they can measure them, but they can't reap them because they don't have any longer the business unit going with it. If they would have finished 2 or 3 years earlier, and if they had done that in smaller steps, that would actually work. And one of the biggest challenges they now face is in the middle of the program. First 2 years were very business driven. They knew what they wanted to do. They had KPIs that they wanted to report, and they structured the system accordingly. 2 years into the program, they realized, well, first of all, we have to change our whole infrastructure beneath it, and we have to change the whole IT, which adds complexity. And then they decided, well, SAP has this fantastic new in-memory technology. We don't really know what we're going to do with it, why we use HANA instead of other reporting systems, but we'll just do it. And this is where it dunked. So we added complexity on the technology side, had nothing to do with business benefits, because if you're talking about EPM or performance management reporting in a financial sense, yes, it's very nice if you have that in memory and it's really quick. Well, let's be fair. Who does need in-memory technology for reporting purposes? So, last hypothesis, uniqueness in a sense of you've never done this before, and probably a lot of other people haven't done this before. It is the single biggest risk that something goes wrong. No, lots of no's. Yes, yes, perfect. So once again, quite complex what the colleagues in Oxford did. So one axis gives you the impact on risk of schedule and the other one of cost. And then you took a look at all the projects that went wrong, did a deep dive into those, and asked people, well, what's the reason for it? And what came out is uniqueness down here. So uniqueness is driving cost. Politics is driving time. So within a company, if you get your stakeholders aligned, or if somebody has personal interests, that's actually driving the overall schedule risk of the whole program. And let's take two steps back. Most of us probably know all that without the data behind it. You would have guessed that. I mean, if I tell you personal interests of people will make a program more difficult, everyone is going to say, yeah, okay, that's kind of trivial. What we're going to do in the second part, and I deliberately chose only a few slides, so we need to go into a discussion then, is actually how are we going to prevent that? What are we going to do different? So, narrow sense it. Yeah. I agree. Totally agree. What you would need to do normally, if you take a look at your whole project portfolio, you would set aside, 15%, 20% of your budget to do those innovative product programs. And yes, they might have a higher risk of overrun, but that's okay, because you're calculating with that. But for the large ones, the ones that are not going to be innovative from the beginning, an ERP upgrade, there's no need to do that in a totally new technology. Or even, we even see a few companies that, for example, run SAP, and then they downgrade to, and I'm a huge fan of Microsoft, otherwise I wouldn't be here, but downgrading from SAP to Acceptor, for example, is quite a challenging process if you're like a few billion company. Nobody has ever done that before, so it's unique. You don't find a system integrator that can help you with that. You don't, your people have never done that before, which is normally, by the way, one of the biggest drivers of risk. Normally, it's not about the system integrators. They will find some technical knowledge somewhere in their organization in the world. But the company you're working for, most of the time, they don't have the capabilities to do large programs because you don't need to. I mean, you only do these every 5 years, for example. So you don't build up those capabilities. But if you don't realize that and if you don't get external help, and I'm not like selling McKinsey here, but any company, basically, you will fail. But you're right. If you want to have innovative projects, you will have to have to face more risks. That's just true. Yeah, go, please. That's true. But what I'm trying to say is you can do that, but cut it into little slices. Do it in a slice of a year. Try it out. If it fails, stop it. Do another project. But don't try to be like the most innovative company out there with a five-year program during which people will change, technology will change. And it's more about you can't do those giant leaps, not intentionally. They will happen sometimes, which is a good thing. But intentionally planning to do like a disruptive innovation that is going to change the whole industry, that in itself is more or less not possible. It is. And once we come to, we have like four huge pillars that we think project success should be based on, and one of that is people or culture. So I couldn't agree more. So what are the core beliefs? And I've lost actually my watch at the airport, so I have to take a look at the, okay. Well, we have plenty of time, okay. I'm going to concentrate on cost overrun. We could do the same exercise for schedule and benefit shortfall. Cost overrun. If you take a look at the percentage of cost overrun and try to dissect it by reasons, 20% out of those would be your inability to manage strategy and stakeholders. And we'll get like one or two levels deeper for each of those. 23%, which is actually the biggest chunk, would be you have no clue about the technology. Here's culture. And this one is my personally favorite one. You don't have the skills for project management. And most people would say, "Ah, okay." I mean, especially consultancies, let's be sure. They're going to tell you, well, we're doing projects all the time. They have no clue about large project management. This is not what they're trained to do. And it's a huge difference. Even if your business is run with projects, it has nothing to do with changing your whole SAP landscape or anything. It's just a different animal. And people always think, nah, we have like 60,000 employees. Of course we can do project manager, and we have dozens of qualified project managers. And in most cases, they don't. And one of the really the hardest things for us as a company is we go in, and this might surprise you, but we're kind of expensive. So people try to say, well, we don't keep you for 5 years. We would love to have you for 3 months. So you go in, you do an assessment, you talk to people, you work your butt off. So then you realize, okay, there's a few things we found out that, like technology, that can be addressed easily. Changing culture within 3 months is ridiculous. Building up capabilities within 3 months might work, but in most cases it doesn't. So what you're going to do is you have to have somebody building those capabilities, helping people along, and make ourselves redundant as quickly as possible. I know nobody believes that, but that's actually our goal. We want to be gone, because otherwise projects and people would not thrive. So. And by the way, to be fair, we have no idea what the other 18% are. Yeah, and they're just not statistically relevant. I mean, we did, it could give you like 10 reasons, but yeah, we can't sum it up. But what does that mean? And now I'm talking like a McKinsey company perspective on program management. We're saying there's four things that you need to do in order to be successful. Managing strategy and stakeholders. And the focus should be on I'm delivering in value. In value might mean that you get business benefits later or for higher costs, but you get those. So it's not only the old triangle that we all know about cost benefit and cost time scope. Second one, it's a very good idea to know what you're talking about, technology and content wise. especially in IT, what will happen in large organizations, and it's changing nowadays, and I'm very grateful for that, but what we saw in the past, you have, for example, I don't know, an automotive company. And let's assume IT is not a core value driver in automotive, which hasn't changed, but let's say that was the way, like, last 20 years. So IT, for most people, is like, yeah, these are those geeks. They're doing some stuff that I don't understand, and it's expensive, and it takes a long time. I mean, that's more or less the perception once you're in head of engineering at, I don't know, pick one, Daimler, Porsche, VW, anyone, BMW, General Motors. So there's IT as well. So then they're saying, okay, it can't be that difficult. I mean, we're able to build big, complex cars, so why can't you do a small system? And then they're saying, okay, just do that and that and that and that. And from an IT perspective, that is probably much more difficult than people just understand because there's so much interdependencies. But we as IT people tend not to talk in a business language. And during my time in the US, I found that the people in the US are better at that. Back in old Europe, they're actually going to a board member and telling him it's very difficult to install that JavaScript because it's going to interfere with the infrastructure. And eyes will glaze over and people will just look at them, have no idea what they're talking about. But I'll come to that in a second. Building team and capabilities, once again. There might be a few reasons that you don't do that. But as you're saying, I have this program or this project once. I'm going to buy competency from the market, and it's okay that it costs a huge sum of money, and I'm not going to build the capabilities in-house because it's just once. I don't know, you launch a space rocket once. In any other part, you need to invest into that early on. Okay, core project management, shorten projects. If there's one thing you take away, you shorten your projects. And be a stickler to details and to schedules. There's so much thing in project management that people think that is basic. Yeah, we have a schedule, we have interdependencies, we have, I don't know, review meetings, we have release meetings, we have minutes, we have, I don't know, to-do lists, action points, SharePoint. In most large companies I go to, they literally don't. Yes, there's a project organization. Yes, there's a meeting. I mean, how many meetings are you attending that do not have an agenda in the beginning and do not have minutes in the end? People just go there and fight or talk or embrace whatever, and then they go somewhere and nothing happens. And it sounds so basic, but it's actually one of the biggest reasons why projects fail from a business perspective. And you see a lot of people saying, yeah, sure. The thing is, it's not that difficult. If you have people that, well, to be fair, don't need to be liked, they can just push and push and push and just literally kick people till they do all those basic things. And just one hint, which makes my life more difficult, but nevertheless, external consultants, you can blame those. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, use them. Literally leverage externals to say, like, okay, you know, guys, I wouldn't push you that hard, but those bad guys from pick any name, they're actually driving this program so hard, we need to stick to the schedule. And then you can, once they're gone, because eventually we will all be gone, then you can say, okay, we did it. And success is like for all of you, and the bad guys are gone. That's actually okay. We get paid a premium to be these guys. That's fine. Use that. Okay. Now, this is the part where I would really love to go into the discussion. The left side for... I mean, even probably the right side, which would be great. But the left side, most of us should know. And just to mix it up, I'll start at the bottom. Core project management practices. risks are reported. Almost all programs have risks reports, and you will have, I don't know, probability and impact, and you will have a nice matrix 2x2, and you will have dots on that. Every one of you probably does that. And it feels so good if you're like that sub-module lead, and you said, okay, I reported the risk. I'm pretty sure somebody will take care of that risk, because, I mean, I did my job. I reported that. This is not sufficient, and reported and managed is not the same. I mean, just yesterday, before I boarded the plane, I sat in a meeting with like 50 project heads, and we had this huge risk matrix, and people were saying, okay, I don't get enough resources from business for functional unit testing or whatever, system integration testing. And then he like leaned back, and nobody commented on that. And then I said, okay, so what are you going to do about that? Well, there's nothing I can do. And then we asked him, okay, but the people you're talking about, they're actually reporting to you as a person in the line organization, right? In your like normal job. Yeah. Okay. It's not difficult. You just have somebody in a central, I don't know, project management office, and you rigorously follow up on those. You just, I'm not allowed to say that because I know like in the US you have to be difficult with the, in Germany, or let's say in Europe in general, we would just say you'll hit them as long as it takes. And it's not, I mean, it's figurative speech, yeah? But, okay. I'm saying push them, sign off, okay. What also happens a lot is you focus on cost and budget. All of you probably do. Okay, guess what? People out there, nowadays, they're very, very clever. Of course, all their reports will say, we are in time and in budget. And they will say that till they literally hit that wall. And you will not have any early indicators. If you just do a reporting and not a benefits downward drilled analysis, but just like costs piling up, they will find dozens of ways. Be it that the more creative ones like system integrators delay their invoices, there are the ones that they will reduce scope and just put it in some minutes somewhere, and there's dozens of possibilities there. If you do that, big problem. This one, and now this, and I promise this is the only pitch I do, we actually developed a couple of early warning indicators, and we do project assessments within like 3 weeks, and it's amazing what we found over the last 1.5 years. We can literally do, and I'll show you later some of those, we can do a heat map of capabilities, and more or less significantly we can say that if two of those are red on a certain point, you will have a problem later on. It's not 100% proven scientifically true, but it will be true 80% of the time. And 80-20 is for a consultant already a good number, so we're quite proud of that. So next one, administration of project plan. I just heard you have 4,300 lines in a project plan, right? And I heard, which I still can't grasp, you have like one person doing that, more or less, or knowing it in detail. I mean, normally you would need a small army. I mean, how are you going to do that? So once you change one, let me give you one example. Once you change a task, and this task has an impact on another task because there's a, I don't know, start to finish, whatever dependency, most projects will not, and I know all Microsoft employees know, but they will not update that in the project plan. There's going to be a project plan in the beginning, and then there's lots of fancy reports, and then there's one in the end. But most people do not use project and functionality in there to track dependencies and really do that and do a like a baseline dependency analysis. If that's different in all of your projects, you're actually way ahead of the curve, but most people don't. So what you need is, if somebody asks you, what's the critical path? Give me the number, give me each single task that leads to a critical path. And if you need to do an analysis to answer that question, you're probably behind the curve. Because if you have that many lines and you're not like really, really transparent, even though it's a big effort, only finding out which are the critical ones will take you 2 to 3 weeks, and there are already different ones. So it makes a lot of sense to invest into those capabilities and have people like push. And at the same time, once you report that to management, please, dear God, do not show them project plans on in a Microsoft project server. Do not like show those fancy graphs with like 4,000 lines. Nobody gets that. Nobody. I mean, my wife always tells me, it's like executives are like our daughter, and she's 4-year-old. That's more or less the same attention span. And if you do that, it works pretty well. So we have like 5 bullets on a page. All of those, this is ridiculous. This is shouldn't be there. Should have like 5 bullets. Yeah. Okay. I totally agree, but what I would do, I would show them a slide with 5 bullets, and if they have this double-click mentality, you can do it once or twice to show them that you have all the facts behind that, and we do that as well. Otherwise, they don't believe you, and I think that's good. I mean, if I go to a CFO, I have like 20 slides in the backup that are dozens of data on it, but the one that I show is very, very high level, but I agree, especially engineers, I mean, they're into details, most of them. No.
I would agree with you. Working with my customers, I have more pictures you need, less words you need.
I mean, actually, on my flight over, when I took a look at that presentation, I wasn't sure if this one would fly, because there's like, I don't know, I haven't counted it, but there's like 20 bullets on a slide. Normally, we would do the same presentation with one huge picture of, I don't know, a tree, and 3 bullets on it. And this would be the way you should communicate, which does not mean you don't need to have the facts. Yeah, but there you go again. I mean, it sounds so basic, but exactly establishing that transparency, which is like down here, is one of the hugest benefits you can have in a program. I'm sorry.
One more thing I'll say, I don't know if it belongs in number 4 or 3, is about what gets measured. How are we wording our project management accountable? So I've seen in some of my clients that they don't ask project managers, you know, or they don't hold them accountable for doing that.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, especially if you're talking about large programs in the telco company that I work for, the guy was reporting directly to the CFO, so he was a business unit head, and he was like, he's now full-time running that program. If it fails or not, it doesn't necessarily impact his career. We're talking 250 million, 3 years, so it should impact his career. And all of the program managers beneath him, they should be, I mean, they should have an incentive driving that. It's not only about punishment, it's also about once it's finished, what are people going to do afterwards? Because if I know that there's more or less no job, I'm not going to finish that program. I mean, why should I? So I agree, benefits management is, on a value level, but also on a personal level. And we all tend to neglect that because it's you can't put it in a program plan. And you can, like, can't measure it, but how are you going to get people motivated? Yeah, and I'm probably in a room full of software developers, so I try to choose my words carefully. And I'm a Scrum Master, so I'm into Agile. But whenever one of my clients tells me, now we're going to do an Agile development, what that means is we'll have chaos, because we're not going to do any planning at all. And we're not going to do real Scrums and Sprints and anything. It is just a euphemism for I don't want to plan any longer. And in those cases, Agile is a real, real problem. If you do Agile in the correct way, which from my view is more challenging for people than the usual ways, and it's for all of them, for business people, because they have to sit down with those techies on a daily basis, and they like, kind of have to agree on something. And after a few weeks, they have to agree on the one thing that they agreed on 4 weeks before that, and they can't say after 2 years, no, that's not what I wanted. So if you do it in a correct way, Agile will actually decrease a lot of risks, because it just shortens time spans, and you deliver, and you have all those indicators that you saw before, they will actually go down. But, and this is the one thing, in large companies, I haven't seen that many large companies that can do Agile. So I think we still have a long way to go till we're there. And for example, I can tell you one company, they're producing navigation systems. And they're doing handhelds. And they actually have been market leader for quite some time. And they're very good internally at developing Agile new algorithms, how to do wave pathfinding and so on. The same guys then said, now we're going to enter the automotive market, and we're going to do in-dash navigation systems and go to, I don't know, BMW, whatever. I don't know how many of you have ever worked in the automotive industry, but what they call a PEP, which would be like the path how a car is developed, I mean, it's almost down to minutes. It's absolutely rigid. And if you go there as an Agile developer, that's kind of interesting how these two companies clash. And then if you're telling, I don't know, the Volkswagen of the Welt, you're going to tell them, well, okay, I have this really, really fancy project, and it is better, and I can prove it is better. And they even will believe you it is better. They will still say, the tail is not going to wag the dog here. This is my process, and you'll stick to that process. So if we could, like, improve the world and have more Agile, I would be happy to do that. I think we have a few years to go still. And to, in all fairness, before I did consulting, I did a real job. I was CIO of a mid-sized company, and I failed miserably in doing an Agile program. It wasn't one of my better things. Okay, let me get to this one. Vendor dependency. In a program I'm doing right now, I'm working together with Accenture. And I actually like the guys. I mean, they're doing a terrific work. It irritates me that each time, literally each week, I ask them, like, how many employees do you have? They have, like, 20,000 more. But apart from that, they're really doing a good job. And but what is happening is actually the client this morning called me and told me, why don't I give my whole testing to Accenture as well? I said, okay, they're already doing the development, right? He said, yeah. So you want a system integrator to like develop something, test it for you, and implement it? I said, yeah, absolutely. It will reduce our risk. And I, yeah, in that special case, it might actually reduce the risk because they don't have the capabilities in-house. But talking about vendor dependency, I mean, that's a nightmare. How you, you can't do that, period. So if you don't have the competencies in-house, buy them. I don't know, take whatever there is, Capgemini to control Accenture and the other way around, which produces other problems, but please don't give everything to one company. And I'm picking those two because they come to the top of my head. I'm not like promoting anyone. Okay, this one is also one of my favorites. You will have people, especially business people, who know a lot of things about their business, finance environment, for example. They have never, ever in their whole life run a program or a project. That is a huge, huge difference. So please don't choose for your teams the best subject matter experts without having people who know how project management works. All those fancy little things, how to set up a project organization, how to do reporting, RASCI matrix, so responsible approve, and so if you know this one, this is just like, you need to have that. I mean, for example, think you're a, I don't know, you have to repair shoes as a profession, but you don't know how to use a hammer. It's going to be pretty difficult, and this is the same here. If you don't have project management experience, please push people to get it. Put them into trainings. We did a training for our current client, with like 40 people, PMI certification, so. And they were literally sitting there after 2 years in the program saying, wow, now I know why I need to do these weekly updates. And it cost me a few hairs, but it's just, it's not as obvious as we all think it is. This one, chosen for availability versus capability, also a big one. Management will kick off a program. There's people that are free. Like always, the people that are free in the large organizations are the ones that are driving the organization forward. Otherwise, they wouldn't be free, of course. So you stick them into a program. Most of the time, it doesn't work. If you don't have the capabilities in the beginning, you will fail. And I admit it's much easier to say that as an external, because I can literally enrage a board member and go. I will not return for the next few years, probably, but I can go. If you do that internally, it's much harder. But if somebody asks you to be the program lead and you take a good look at the people and they don't have the capabilities, even if it sounds like you crush your career, please don't do it. Because you will crush it if you accept it. Okay, let me take a, okay, 7 minutes and then we have like changes. Okay, this one, IT driven. Probably people for like 10 years put that on slides, and still most programs are driven by IT once they go into some kind of software. And most of the time, it has nothing to do with IT. Let me give you that example again, navigation player. We talked for them about a business strategy. What are they going to do with their business? Are they going to sell off business units or not? So what happened is they said, okay, we have the best algorithm in the world, and it can, like, on that map, get you from point A to B faster than any other competitor. And you're like, okay. And then they started the task force, and they even optimized that algorithm. From an end customer perspective, would you even know which company gets you faster from A to B and would choose a car, a whole car? Dependent whether or not the navigation system gets you quicker from A to B. And they optimized that because they had the IT capability to do that. And that's even in the, especially in the US where you just more or less pick up a car and don't order it, that's ridiculous. People never ever do that, never. But even the business guys did not challenge that. They said, yeah, it's a good idea. We need to be faster in pathfinding algorithms. Business case, I already touched this one. And I'm not saying you can't measure everything, but you can measure almost everything. And you can put a value to it. It might be wrong, it might be like 80% correct, okay. But it's better than not having any clue at all. So if somebody approaches you saying, I have to do my finance reporting new, my question is always, okay, why? What's the difference? What does it change in your business? And then they tell me, okay, I get better reports, and based on those better reports, I will make better decisions. I'm like, okay, show me, like, which data would you require? And then in the end, like 90% of the time, people will say, oh, okay, I'm not sure if I get better decision-making out of that, but it just looks nicer. Okay, if looks nicer is a value, put a lower number next to it. But don't tell me you will be able to acquire companies because of a better finance reporting that is quicker than the last one. I would literally not have that in a business case. Okay. This one is also nice. I don't know if you know. This is normally when people say, okay, let's introduce Agile. Because what they did is they wrote requirements documents for 1,000 pages and then realized nobody's reading that. And then they're saying, okay, now we're doing it in an Agile way, which means we don't read what we did. What do you need to do? Is this one. It makes a huge difference. I haven't shown the slides, but it makes a huge difference if you invest early into definition from a business perspective. I know you've heard that like 20 times before, but it's scientifically correct. Don't ever do anything else. And it should actually be, I have two slides left. So, and this is, it's not meant to be a pitch, it's meant to be, take it with you, and you can have all the slides, by the way, if you like to. Take it with you and do it yourself. Quick assessment of a project status. Go out there, assess projects in your company. Are they good or bad? Are they working or not? With our methodology, and there might be others in the market, it takes us 2 to 4 weeks. And we're pretty sure we will have a decent result. And we will be able to tell you how many of those will fail. We're not right 100% of the time, but most of the time we are. So what we then have is we go to a CFO and CIO and tell him, out of your project portfolio, we expect 10 out of 15 to fail. What are you going to do about that? It's a huge difference than saying, like, okay, we have that fox somewhere, let's see. Once you have that, you need to have a turnaround plan. One slide to that. And even that one, there's probably a lot of vendors here, and you will kill me, but most contracts that I see, you can get 20 to 40% cost saving out of those contracts, even with large vendors, because large companies are not used to manage contracts on a big scale. So if you're talking outsourcing 600 million of a company, they do that for the first time. They haven't outsourced like all other of their business units. So, and I could, well, if I was allowed to, I could give you some examples where you can get a lot of benefit out there. So even if you get out of 100 million, you get like 50 million back. You can even fail miserably with the program and still be on a positive business case. So I promised 2 slides. If you ever want to talk to that, to us about that, or somebody else in the market, we call that value assurance. So we make sure that in the end you hit your project. And this is one of the methodologies and one of the outputs. Now everyone will say, okay, that's high-level consultant, traffic lights, blah, blah, blah. Behind each of those, there are like 2 to 4 indicators, so we would have that tree another 3 levels down. And it will, for example, I did that for the public sector in Germany. We had like 12 projects, took a look at that, and then you have like a heat map. And whenever there's at least 2 red, you can be pretty sure it's going to go off the rails at some point. So if you want to talk about that, drop me an email, happy to. Okay, See, that happens if you present from another computer. Okay, nevertheless. Want to do a quick assessment in any way you like? You have a diagnostics. Okay, obviously you need to design a therapy, what to do with it. And then you rigorously execute that. And that can mean three things. It can mean stop. Stop the bleeding in some cases is a good idea. All the windows go, oh gosh, no, but it actually is. Second one is readjust scope and objectives. So you keep your time plans and budgets, but you do less. Third one, obviously, is, you need more time and budget. If you do that with an external auditor, it's much easier because people will believe that auditor more than they believe you. Because what normally happens is you don't want to face the music, and then once you hit the wall, you will do a rescoping, and people will tell you, okay, why didn't you see that earlier? So it's easier to do it once you're if you have an external one. Okay. You shouldn't even read that one in detail. I can send it to you because there's a lot of things on it. But just if you take a look at those numbers, so the bold ones, this is actually what it can take out in a sense of risk mitigation if you do it early enough, which is a lot. My favorite one is this one. We invested heavily in the team capabilities and the skills. What they did is they saved 100 million over 5 years because they were able to get system integrators and even us consultants out of the program in the end because they could just do it themselves. I think that's a huge one. Okay, we have a few minutes left and I tried to rush through so we can have a discussion, which means you're the ones asking questions and I'm trying to facilitate the questions between you. Yes. Yeah. I would even say most large companies do have some kind of those formal processes, but in the end, how they're living those is a totally different thing. I mean, everybody will have risk management to some degree. But once you're just like using the risk report each week and putting it into a folder, okay, what are you going to do with that? I mean, if you, I'm actually not 100% sure, but I think it was Jack Welch who wrote a book and said that it's about execution. And being a strategy consultant and talking about execution is quite a big leap, but in the end, it is about execution. It's a very good idea to have all those controls in place, yes, but if you don't execute on those, it doesn't help. It will give me some revenue, but apart from that, I'm not driven by revenue, so. Well, you can, but it's much, much, much more difficult. All right, let me give you one quite silly answer and then the real one. The silly one is, to be quite fair, we have the advantage of brand recognition. I will only work for CX, whatever, which makes it easier. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't buy me because I'm too expensive. So I have from the beginning but if I'm talking about a normal IT project that I did in the past and trying to get that attention up there, it is very, very difficult. What works very good with those large programs, you don't talk about, I don't know, budget overrun. You talk about risk to the company. And that gets you into the head of especially the CFO nowadays because he's normally like in the risk business. And if you're talking, for example, about if I don't upgrade my ERP system, and if that fails again, I will not be able to deliver products, you're suddenly very, very high on an agenda. If you're another, the client I was talking about, they have two other mother companies, or head, and if they don't upgrade their reporting system, they will not be compliant for reporting in the New York Stock Exchange. And suddenly you're on a CFO agenda, and he would do anything just to get the any analyst off his back. If I tell him it's like 10 million more, yeah, he will be enraged, but in the end he doesn't care. But once I talk about risk, that works pretty well. That's a very nice one. Just last week, we had people complaining in the program saying, "I have so many meetings, we can't concentrate on the real work, and it's a big hassle, blah, 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 and that's why we're delayed." And so I went up on stage and said, "Okay, you have 3 meetings a week, 3 hours. On top of that, you have like, I don't know, 1.5 hours preparation. So let's say 5 hours a week. You and your module," and I literally put people on the spot, "you have like 9 months of delay. So even if I deduct those 5 hours a week, how many years and lifetimes would it take you if this is the only reason?" And they don't like you for that, but you need to cut away bushes people hide behind. I mean, it's just amazing what excuses people can come up with. But once they don't go to meetings any longer, like meetings that make sense, I totally agree, then you've probably, it's a good indicator. Okay, I'm still waiting for the question that somebody says, like, what the hell is McKinsey doing in IT? But it hasn't happened, so that's nice. So market perception seems to change. I like that. Okay, thank you very much.